I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove, from the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Brooke Annabelle is a singer-songwriter from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, whose latest album, Silence Worth Breaking, was released in March 2011 and features 10 acoustic-based tracks produced by Paul Moak in Nashville, Tennessee. Moak and his cast of veteran Nashville musicians layer rich ambient textures over Annabelle's insightful pop songs, creating nothing short of a masterpiece. Brooke visited Lancaster back in April to showcase at the Launch Music Conference and dropped by the Candy Factory to chat with me about the album and some mutual friends of the Wood Stove House. Well, joining me at the Candy Factory in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Brooke Annabelle from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here to talk about this brand new album, Silence Worth Breaking, which came out just last month in March of 2011. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
I've been really enjoying listening to this album. I think it's fantastic. There are just a tremendous number of great songs that I keep thinking are my favorite. I start with one, and then it comes back to another. It was produced by somebody in Nashville, Tennessee, Paul Moak. Am I saying
it's
that right?
It's Moak.
Moak, okay.
Yeah.
Paul Moak. Can you tell me the story of how you ended up working with Paul Moak in Nashville, Tennessee, being from Pittsburgh?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, it starts with I went to college in Nashville at Belmont. Majored in music business and graduated in May of 2009 and ended up moving back to Pittsburgh once I graduated. But one of my friends that I graduated with, he was like a music production major at Belmont, mm-hmm. and he had interned with Paul while he was at Belmont, and Paul ended up hiring him after he graduated, and so he's there as an assistant engineer with him. From you know, the time that he started working with Paul, he was like, Brooke, you've got to work with Paul. You've got to check out his studio. It's really great, all this stuff. And I was sort of hesitant because I thought, well, why would Paul want to work with me?
You know,
I mean, what do I have to do to get him to want to work with me kind of thing? So I was on a little mini tour in September of 2010 and finally took Justin, is his name, the engineer, up on checking out the studio, and it was just sort of like a dream studio. You know, everything's set up that you'd want to work with. You know, all instruments are already fired up and ready to go. Yeah. And sort of talked about, you know, the way that Paul works, and it just really sounded like a dream to me, the way I wanted to make my next record. And so from that point on, I called his manager the next day and started talking about how to get it set up, and started a Kickstarter campaign like the next week to start raising money for it. And after about a month of the Kickstarter campaign, I reached the goal and started recording within about a month after that.
Wow. So this fast track.
It was very fast, because he had the space available the 3 weeks before Christmas, and I had that space available, so things had to happen quickly, I guess. So.
And this is your third record, right?
It is, yeah. I did one in high school and one while I was in college. I did both of those in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, this is the third full-length record.
So you were you had the material, you went and you did the recordings in a few weeks. Did you use Pittsburgh musicians or did you use musicians from Nashville?
They were musicians that Paul and I had talked about beforehand. Sort of Paul listened to the demos that I gave him and you know, called his friends that he knew would fit the music the best.
Sure.
Yeah. And when he gave me the list of names and I looked them up and saw what else they had worked on, it was really, I was like, yeah, that right. Sounds good, you know?
Let's talk about some of the songs on the album. I'm going to start sort of in the middle.
Okay.
Because as I listened through to it the first couple times, it was really the second half that grabbed me, particularly the song Tryin'. That was the first song that I think, you know, I get these records and I'll put them on as I'm doing other things. And then when something jumps out at me, I'll go back to the record and kind of focus in and see what's going on with it. And that song really made an impact. I love the way that the vocals were recorded. You know, there's such a lonely sort of desperation to them. It's very authentic, and they're very real. Can you tell me about this song, and then maybe talk a little bit about how you made those decisions in the studio?
Yeah, well, the song is one that, you know, there's some songs you spend months writing, and then there's others that just sort of come out, and this was one that I wrote in probably half an hour to 45 minutes.
Wow.
I went to see the Swell Season in Pittsburgh it was in May, and I when I came home, it was just one of those concerts that I felt really inspired and wanted to go home and play the guitar and see what happened. So that song happened after that, and it was pretty late at night, and so I wanted to quickly record it so I wouldn't forget it in the morning.
Yeah, sure.
And so I recorded it on GarageBand on my computer, but I was really quiet because it was late at night and I had to be quiet. And so when it came to sending Paul some of the songs that I was thinking about doing for the record, that was the version that I sent him, and he thought, I love the way you did this. And I was like, really? It's just really quiet. I didn't really perform it the way I would have thought, you know, we'd do it. But he's like, I want to try to recreate that. So so that's what we did, was try to recreate that sort of demo, quiet, in my bedroom sound, you know.
Being quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked. I mean, that it definitely comes across that way.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great how sometimes an accident, or, and you know, something that you don't expect, you're not being intentional, I suppose, the way I want to say that, leads to really the end product, which is very artfully crafted, I think, on the record.
Yeah, it was really cool because it was the last song that we recorded for the whole record, and the band was there, and we hadn't planned on using them on the song because we wanted to keep it acoustic. But Paul said, "Let's everybody's gonna play something they haven't played yet on the record." And so, you know, the bass player went to the organ, and the drummer went to the vibraphone, and the guitar player went and sat on the upright piano, and Paul played a bell, you know, and we all did it live, you know, all together, and then the cello sounds are sort of extra on top, but you can barely tell they're strings anyway because they're kind of like using the back of the bow and kind of things like that to make a eerier sound, you know.
That's a great job.
Thanks.
Don't know how to say what I'm about to say. Forgive me if I stutter. I find my way. 'Cause I'm trying, trying my best. Don't don't know how to do what I'm about to do. So if I were to mess it up, would you still help me through? 'Cause
I think my favorite song is the next one on the album, which is Under Streetlights. This one gets repeated a lot on the old iPod. I really like the mood of it, the electric guitar in the background, this ambience that it adds really kind of sorts it out for me in that respect. And the chorus itself, I quoted 2 hours till sunrise. That particular phrase, It took me to that time. Because, you know, there's a time in the night.
Yeah.
That when things are just starting to open up, and if you've been up, there's that feeling. And when I heard you sing that line, it really, I went right to that place, that feeling that you get, which you can't get anywhere else. Can you tell me the story behind this particular song?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this was one where I started with the melody, and I had that idea for the melody in the verse, and then I decided that it could be like a progression of a relationship, you know, looking sort of retrospectively at things that had happened and then things that are in the future or things that are yet to come, and sort of drifting back and forth in between scenes of the relationship, what had already happened and what was yet to come, sort of.
Yeah.
And all the places where I would remember things that happened, you know. So, yeah, and I tried to piece that together in a progression, sort of, I guess.
But this is a fictional. Is this a fictional story?
No, not necessarily.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I mean, the way you said that, it sounded like you're like,
well, no, you just, know, just if retrospectively wouldn't. Towards a relationship.
Gotcha. I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. My guest today is Pittsburgh songwriter Brooke Annabelle. And The Way It Was is really, it's a great pop song. I really like the way the chorus takes off. You know, I kind of, that's one of the things that I really like in a pop song is when, you know, things are happening during the verses, and the verse really sets up a chorus, and this song really does that. Talk about what the sense of longing is in this one. There's the line, I can't ever go back to the way it was. Where does that come from for you? What inspired that?
Well, I think that we all probably have times in our lives that we look upon sort of sentimentally and wish sometimes you could be back in those moments.
Sure.
But the specific inspiration for this song was, I went to school in Nashville for 4 years, and I mean, throughout those 4 years, every year was different, you know, living in a different place, hanging out with different people, different things are happening in the city. But once I graduated and moved on, when I would come back and visit, it would just feel different because it was sort of this place where I used to have my home, my life, my everything I was doing was there. And I would come back and it would just sort of be this old piece of my life that I wasn't really a part of anymore. And so it was kind of, it's not a negative reflection on it. It's more like a, you know, that was a great time in my life, but I have to know that I have to move on from that, that I can't go back to, you know, to college and have that college life again, you know, or even just whatever was happening in that time. It you can't ever go back to good things or bad things. So it's just,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's a shame you can't. It would be nice every once in a while, at least just for a few days.
Yeah.
but yeah, not gonna happen.
This place doesn't feel the same anymore. Can't trace how or why it seems to change. But it seems it's changed. Like an old friend that I used to know so well. But I've been gone so long.
I'm gonna circle back to a couple of the earlier tracks on the album. Empathy stands out as a track that really has some deep meaning. Mm-hmm. I really like where you're coming from with this. Can you talk about that one some?
Yeah, sure. This is one of the actually older songs on the record that I started and sort of had to marinate almost. You know, it was like the pieces weren't quite right or the chorus wasn't quite there, so. I started writing this a couple years ago and didn't have the title Empathy in mind. Uh-huh. It just sort of happened that way, that the lyrics is or what empathy represented the lyrics the best way.
So the lyrics wrote the title versus
yeah,
the title
because
writing.
Because the title Empathy isn't in the song anywhere. And I was playing at this open mic in Pittsburgh at Club Cafe and was playing the song and didn't have a title for it, and sort of threw out the idea that if you have a suggestion for a title and let me know. And somebody said, you should call that song Empathy. And I thought, I never really thought of that before. So it was almost like you're right. That's what it represents. And it sort of brought the whole song together for me, you know?
Did they get credit?
I haven't actually told them yet, but they should get credit. I've told that story a couple times, but I don't think that person was ever around, so.
I know it's hard, because I'm standing where you are. I can feel the pain, I know it well. We can't lay where we fell. Expect a change. I see the line invisible.
Another track I wanted to talk about is Feels Like Home. This mm-hmm. this is another good example, I think, of the ambience that that underlines the whole record, really. You know, the mm-hmm. the ambient textures really glue together these songs and to me make it a cohesive album. Like if I was listening to it as a full piece, each song has its own unique quality, but that ambience really brings it together. Mm-hmm. And I find it to be very calm, like a very calm and peaceful layer, you know, that sits under the melodies. There's a line in particular, wherever we are found, and then right into the chorus when you say it feels like home. I really like the way that works, the way that that verse rolls into the chorus there. That's,
thanks.
Can you talk about the song, the meaning behind this one?
Yeah. I feel like I've always had this theme. I've written about this theme a few times where you're just sort of searching for that thing that feels like home, that place that encompasses everything that you want in one place. And this song sort of took the focus off of the place necessarily and how it's just who you're with that makes it feel like home, you know. And it's almost like as you travel to more places throughout your life and spend more time in more places, you find your little pieces of home everywhere you go. There's something that makes that place feel comfortable to you. And so it's almost more so where the people are that you find your comfort in that makes it feel like home. And so that's sort of like the meaning behind wherever we are found is what feels like home. So
busy streets are fading till no one's there. Gravity evaporating. We're floating in the air. We're floating in the air. And it feels like
part of the reason why I think that we're making this connection is because of a tour that you did a couple of years ago with some friends of the Woodstove House, Hiram Ring and Joy Ike, mm-hmm. The four on tour. I met Hiram a few years just before that, maybe a year before that, and followed him on the internet. You know, mm-hmm. he's really good at posting videos and blogging about his touring. And I actually remember watching some of the videos. One in particular was the one at Bongo Java.
Oh, yeah.
Because I spent a lot of time there in the 90s when I lived in Nashville, and I was like, oh, these guys are... And there was this new room.
Yeah, it's like an upstairs theater sort of thing.
Yeah, that was that was really cool. So I've had both Hiram on the show and Joy as well. So now that you're here, I guess that just leaves Garrett.
Yeah, you've got three quarters of the group.
Who I don't know, so I need to be introduced in some way to, mm-hmm. Does he live around? Where does he live?
He lives actually in like Oil City, PA, so it's like 2 hours north.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, of Pittsburgh.
All right, I better get him on here. What was that experience like for you, touring with three other musicians and, you know, sharing the bill rather than going out on your own? Yeah. How do you compare that to doing solo tours?
It was really cool. I mean, I had only been on a couple little tour, like weekend tours, so it was... First of all, the longest tour I had been on, and it was really nice to share the evening with three other, you know, musicians that I liked their music and got to see perform every night, and it was just fun because it felt more like an event instead of just, you know, me trying to build excitement. It was cool. I mean, it was fun to travel with other people and see how they work on the road and how, you know, you figure out how to tour, you know, just by experiencing it. So it was really cool.
I suppose it'd be a bit less lonely.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Than driving into a town and having to wait, you know, all day to to play by yourself.
A lot less intimidating, because driving into, you know, Philadelphia for the second time in my life, I don't know where I'm going. So it's great if somebody else is knows the way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear about a handful of records that you really couldn't live without, whether they be something that you grew up on or something new that's just really been inspiring you. Give me two or three albums that, you know, if you were going on a 6-hour road trip, you would queue up.
It's so hard to pick like two or three. I feel every time somebody tells me, give me your 5 favorite, I give them 7. So,
all right, so it's an 8-hour road trip.
Yeah. Well, I guess when I was a kid, I always listened to first I listened to the Monkees a lot, which is very, I mean, that sounds kind of funny these days, but they're going back on tour.
Is that right?
This summer, they're coming to Pittsburgh. I might have to check them out.
Absolutely.
But I really liked the Monkees, had their tape, and you know, my aunt and uncle said, you know, Brooke, and this is me at 7 or something, Brooke, if you like the Monkees, you might like the Beatles. And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm kind of loyal to the Monkees, you know, but they got me a Beatles tape, and I, you know, have liked them since a very young age, and that's pretty cliche, but it's kind of funny because I was...
Right.
Loyal to the Monkees first, but I guess as far as...
Both legends.
Yes.
Both legends in their own way.
Yes. As far as the what CDs would be in my car for a road trip, I mean, this past trip that I just made, the newest thing that I just fell in love with was Robert Francis. He opened up for Katie Tunstall, who I saw in Pittsburgh last week, and just really love his record. Is 2 years old now, I think, but just discovered it and really love it. But that's just a new addition to my to my stuff. But I guess things that first come to mind would be The Swell Season, and their Strict Joy, or The Once soundtrack. I've always been a fan of John Mayer. I feel like his music has changed as my tastes have kind of changed, and just the side of the kind of pop music that I like, him, you know. And I always have liked blues too, and so Continuum is probably my favorite of his records. And Coldplay, I really love. Recently, Mumford and Sons. I listened to them every morning before I went into the studio.
That's interesting.
It was sort of in my car on the way there. So, but then, of course, there's a lot of female singer-songwriters that I've just loved over the years as I've grown in being a musician, like Brandi Carlile and Katie Tunstall, Katie Herzig, Missy Higgins, Rachel Yamagata.
It's a long road trip.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that could be 8 hours worth of music there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to come and talk to me about your music.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I think this record, Silence Worth Breaking, is fantastic. I hope that it opens a lot of doors for you in your career.
Thank you.
And enjoy launch and your weekend in Lancaster.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Brooke Annabelle is a singer-songwriter from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with a wonderful new album called Silence Worth Breaking. To learn more about Brooke online, find her at brookeannabelle.com or link up from our website, woodstovehouse.com, where you can also check out show notes, listen to past episodes, subscribe to the show on iTunes, or make a donation to keep the show going. This episode was recorded at the Candy Factory, Lancaster's premier shared workspace. Learn more at candyissweet.com.
Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.
Yeah, that obnoxious tickle.
Yeah.